Hey guys, you're listening to Nick Talk. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Nikki James. And today I have a very cool guest on. His name is Dan Lawrence, and we're basically going to talk music. So you're in a band.
Yes, ma'am.
And your band is called?
Gossamer.
Gossamer. You know, I looked that up, and it's really cool. You have a few things out on Spotify, don't you?
Yes, we have our latest releases on there. It was kind of exciting to join the Spotify community as an artist, actually.
Heck yeah. That's probably really cool to where I couldn't imagine being like, oh yeah, you can find my song on Spotify. Like, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it was kind of like we were so happy with how it turned out. We were willing to, you know, put ourselves out to, you know, anybody and anybody wherever. Listeners across the pond and in Europe and some up in Canada, different parts of the country, and it's really neat.
That's cool. Was it a process trying to get your music onto Spotify?
You know, we used cdbaby.com, and they kind of made it pretty easy. So that process wasn't as hard. There's a lot of questions, so it was just kind of like tedious, and making sure you had all of the right file types is kind of really all that was standing in the way. So having computer savvy people on board didn't make it that arduous.
Right. Now, what kind of music do you guys play?
Most times we hear it described as desert rock. Okay. And for us, that's really cool because a lot of the bands that we dig a lot fall into that genre, and it's really nice to hear that maybe we're having that influence come forward in our tunes. We've also got some 70s flair according to different audiences, depending on who you ask.
Yeah. How do you think that differs from regular rock?
Well, our tunes are more like driving with the top down on your way to Las Vegas from Los Angeles, knowing you're about to have a great time.
Okay.
While we're singing about some more heavy stuff, like a lot of it is, this record especially is kind of, I don't know, it's not positive or upbeat in its lyrics, but the tunes are upbeat. So it kind of like has this real nice balance, I feel.
Okay, nice. So what's your favorite song on there, and what's it about?
Well, my favorite song on this thing has to be Regicide, I would say. It was kind of like our first song that we wrote together that was from the early days that kind of stayed with us, and we made it better and better and better. And then what we laid down on Epoch 2 was actually really, really nice. It's got good instrumentation. The vocals are complex. There's tri-harmonies. You know, it just kind of is what we decided we wanted to be as a group.
Okay. So you all of you guys, like kind of joined in on the writing of it?
Yeah. There's different elements that different people wrote. I did most of the vocal writing. Then one of our guitarists wrote the intro. The other one wrote their own solo. There's a lead for each of them. And then there's three-part harmonies on the chorus, or actually there's one, and there's like a lot of call and response on this record, which is what we kind of dig vocally.
Okay, so what does that mean, call and response?
Call and response would be like, I would sing a line, and then you'd have somebody respond with a different line. Like on Regicide, our drummer Dave goes, they took our heads, and then me and Matt yell, Kingslayer, Kingslayer. You know what I'm saying?
So
one guy says this, and the other two say the other.
Okay.
And what would kind of like make my day, well, part two of my day, because part one actually happened recently, would be like if I was singing, like if I heard Dave sing, you know, they took our heads, and then Matt, myself, and like the audience all said Kingslayer, Kingslayer, that would just like fire me right up. I'd probably like break my guitar on stage.
Yeah, because you also play the bass, don't you?
Yes, ma'am. I play the bass. And, you know, I kind of the way we have it set up, the guitar players are on stage right and stage left, and I'm in the middle, and the drums are in the middle, and it kind of like gives it a feel that certain other bands that we dig, like Mastodon, do the same thing where they have the bass player in the middle and the guitars on the side. They also have three-part harmonies. So it's kind of like we draw a lot from them.
Okay.
But yeah, unfortunately front and center, but you know, I relish in the joy of dancing around.
Right. So when did you first start learning how to play bass? Like, was this something you wanted to do as a kid?
Unfortunately, no. When I was a kid, I was all athlete, like basketball, soccer, track, baseball, run, you know, but I also loved music, like listening to it. And like, I could always sing along and like got into it, but I never focused my energy on music. And then as I got older, I kind of lost the ability to compete, lost the ability to get just pure joy out of sports and athletics, and decided I needed another outlet for my energy. And nobody that I really was in the circle of friends with played bass, nor was I really good at any other instrument. So it kind of just fell into my lap, and I relished in it, and I got better and better and better. And, you know, I've been playing for almost 10 years now, and feel pretty confident in what I can do anymore.
What made you want to play bass over the other instruments?
Well, like I said, nobody else played bass. Around that I was hanging out with, everybody wanted to be a guitar player or a drummer or a singer, because that was way cooler, apparently. And, you know, if you read the memes on the internet, bass players kind of are, you know, not the highest of caliber as far as what people like enjoy about music.
Right.
So it's, but, you know, we bass players, we unite, and we're strong that, you know, we're just as important as everybody else, and, you know, can maybe even more so depending on what you like.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think so, because, you know, it's like the people behind the scenes that don't get a lot of credit. Like, you're not even behind the scenes, but I hear what you're saying. Like, sometimes people don't understand, you know, you take out the bass in something and it just has a total different feel. I think, do you remember growing up in the 90s when everybody used to have their bass turned way up in their cars?
Oh yeah. I remember that. And then you'd line your car in like foam so it didn't rattle, or you'd put foam behind your license plate so you didn't like run around buzzing like a bumblebee through town.
Yeah. Your mirror would be like, you couldn't see who was in the back.
Why is everybody so fuzzy? What's going on? It's funny, because like you brought up Radio One. And like, I can remember as a teenager with the big system, me and my buddy were super into like techno. And I was over in Europe for a little while playing soccer and really got into techno. And I remember BBC doing like a Radio One straight hour of like house music. And it was so incredible. It was like the best hour sets I'd ever heard. I was like 16 years old, 15 years old. I was blown away.
Wow.
And like, kind of got my love into like dance music. And then it kind of like, I remember talking to my dad about starting to play bass. He goes, that makes sense. Your love of techno and all being a bass player. I was like, yeah, you're right, man. Cause like, you know, you go to the club, they listen to techno music, and what do? You don't just stand there. You right. dance, right? So I'm the rhythm. I'm what makes you groove. I'm what makes you shake your hips. I'm what makes you potentially, you know, go home and, you know, have a good time. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what the rhythm section's about in the band. The drummer, the bass player, if they're in sync, man, you're in for a treat.
Yeah. Okay. So I heard you just say you were in Europe for soccer.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're talking music here, but what was that about? What would you go over for, like, high school soccer?
No, I was in high school, but I played with, I got involved with this thing called People to People.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of like, you could go to a couple different settings. And I ended up picking Sweden and Denmark.
Mm.
So I went over there for a couple weeks.
How was that?
It was cool as heck, man. Like, I couldn't even, just thinking about it now and thinking of the different intricacies of the city and like how more relaxed it was, the way the air was, how it was July, but it was like kind of cold, and like just all the different elements of what, and I guess cold for me would be, you know, for July, it's like high 60s, you know what I'm saying? But I remember my hotel had a Pizza Hut in the basement. And if you walk And if you walked down this certain tunnel, you would just end up in the middle of the city. It was so interesting. I was in Gothenburg. And that was really neat. They got to go to Hans Christian Andersen's house in Denmark and see that famous Little Mermaid statue on the banks of the ocean there. I got to see some neat stuff. I cherish that more than a lot of things. Playing a bass guitar for sure, you know.
Well, maybe playing the bass guitar can get you to some more of those places and some more of those experiences if you get out there, huh?
But one of the funniest things about all of it is how much I love Swedish culture in general. Now, like a lot of the bands I'm into, like I remember telling you recently, like you asked about us playing, and I said, well, the last thing I did in 2020 that was music related was seeing the Truck Fighters, who are from Sweden. And I remember getting to talk to both of them, and I was like starstruck. And they're just like they're playing in a dang bowling alley in Youngstown, Ohio, and I'm gushing, you know, I'm gushing over these two. And they were probably just like looked at me, and then they like, I told them that I went to Sweden and I was super excited to share that with him. And then like he and I exchanged a couple of like one-liners in Swedish, and then he was like kind of, you know, on stage he said something, I answered him, and it was, you know, it was cool. Aww, it was cool bonding with somebody that you look up so much to, and they're just regular human beings.
What a great experience.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I bet you thought that was pretty sweet.
Swedish.
There's my one liner.
There you go.
Oh. You can
call this the Swedish.
this is the sweet music talk. Welcome to Sweet Talk. Welcome to Sweet Talk on Nick Talk. Okay, so let's talk about writing. Do you guys write all of your own music?
Yes, ma'am. We write everything.
Who's mainly the writer for that? And like, where do you guys draw your inspiration?
Well, lately I've been taking a lot of the front in the writing department. Mm-hmm. And that's just maybe not really the full writing part of it, but it's kind of like, hey, what if we did this? And then kind of like what happens is it's like pushing something down a hill, mm-hmm. but the hill could go kind of any way. It's like free falling down one of the ridges of northern West Virginia that we're so familiar with, you and I. Like if you just rolled something down there, it could bounce and then just start going this way and friggin' hit a tree and then go the other way. You know what I mean? That's kind of what our music turns into.
Yeah.
And something just sticks. And then I'll come down on Sunday mornings and listen to like practice, and I'll give it some strange name of like how I felt while I was listening to it. Like one might be called Arduous Climb or Spelunking, or you know, The Sky King, you know what I'm saying? Just like different feels from the song, and sometimes it sticks and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, you know, you hear some of these songs today, you know, that are you know, what we call in the industry like radio worthy. Like they've got the hook, they've got the proper timing, and that's a radio hit, right? That's something that you can put on the radio. And and then you have all of these different things, these amazing creative songs that, you know, a lot of times people don't get to hear. So how do you combat that moving forward? Because you guys are trying to be on the radio, right, eventually?
You know, I don't know about being on the radio. I think that if we got on the radio, it'd be really neat, but I don't think we write the kind of songs that would be radio worthy, only because bands that were super influenced by the amount of times I've heard them on radio in the Pittsburgh market are probably less than five bands that we really dig. So kind of like what you rely on is you rely on releasing quality material on neat looking, you know, pressings, and then hoping people buy that. Like bands anymore are living on merch.
Mm-hmm.
And if they would be lucky enough to get onto a label that does sponsored tours or whatever, or sends people on tour and pays them.
Mm-hmm.
Distribution sales. But again, that goes back to having a really nice product.
Right.
And that's kind of what we're seeing. Like, you know, I know we talked about getting on Spotify and how exciting that was, but you got to realize that, like, you know, the amount that the artists get from your streams aren't exactly the most. So a lot of bands are hoping that, yeah, you stream their music and listen to it and love it, but you love it enough to buy their t-shirt. You love it enough to maybe buy a physical copy. Mm-hmm. you love it enough to go to their shows. And
yeah,
that's when you know it's real. And Bandcamp's done a lot of really cool stuff lately where on Fridays, especially during, it all kind of kicked off during the pandemic, said that on Fridays, whatever you buy, all the proceeds go to the band. They don't take a cut.
Hmm.
So on Twitter, I see lots of people like listing what they grabbed on Bandcamp. And actually today I selflessly put our thing out there on Bandcamp. I don't do it that often. You know, that ain't my thing.
Yeah.
But today I decided to, just because, you know, maybe associated with getting to talk to you or having a good outlook on the day. You feel good.
Right. Yeah. And I think, so when it, because your band is relatively new, isn't it?
Yeah, we started about 2015. Didn't play a show till the summer of 16, I'd say.
What kind of shows have you played?
Well, we actually went on a small Thursday to Sunday show run in November of last year. We played in Pittsburgh on a Thursday, played Morgantown on a Friday, and then we went to Virginia on Saturday, and we went to DC on Sunday and played actually in Washington, DC.
Oh, wow.
And it was all booked by the bands. There was no person that knew people that was able to get it. It was mostly like, who do you know as a human being that could get a show, right? Mm-hmm. So the band we played with was the Stone Eye from Philadelphia. Cool kids, really good music, really like hanging out with them. They're like a Alice in Chains type thing, and we really dig that. So it was fun playing with them, but they took the Virginia and DC show, and that's what they were in charge of booking. And we had to do Pittsburgh and Morgantown. And it kind of like, you know, went around a roulette wheel of who knows who, what can we do? And it was like a last ditch effort that we were able to get this bar in Pittsburgh called Tower 29 that allowed us to play there with a couple guys. And we had that show. We went to Morgantown, played a vintage clothing store. It was lots of fun.
Wow.
My wife and her daughters got to come and see us down there, and it was a good time. And then we drove all the way to Virginia and played a couple shows and just partied and acted like college kids again.
Yeah, super cool. Okay. What made you want to be in a band to begin with? So I asked you about instruments and why you wanted to play the bass. We talked about that, but what made you want to be in a band?
I don't know. I think it was my love of music started to get really intense. And my friend Dave, I guess he'd probably be my best friend besides my wife, plays drums in our band Gossamer. He's the drummer, and it's the Dave I referenced earlier, but he's my best friend. And back in like 2010, kind of like went through a bunch of shit in my life and moved on from a past, and but didn't know really what my future was. And he and I started hanging out, and we would go do karaoke at a local bar that I live right by now. And then we would play Rock Band in his living room, right? And we would, you know, he'd play the drums all the time, and then I'd play bass, and we'd alternate vocals, and we would just do songs together. And then we kind of like looked at each other and like kind of had this idea together that one day we want to play music together because we think we can do something. And, you know, jammed and jammed with various people, tried different bands, different sounds. And then one day on Instagram, Dave shows me a video of these two dudes playing guitar, and it's like a real Pink Floyd sound. And we love Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the video and I go, Dave. I was like, that guy right there on the right, that's my cousin. Ended up being my cousin Matt and his friend Wes.
Okay.
And we call them, and it was like the weekend of my 30th birthday. And boom, 2015, 30th birthday, we start a band a week later. And, you know, probably 4 years later, we're playing in Washington, D.C. at like a major place.
Wow, so, that's great.
Yeah.
So where do you see your band going? Like, what's your goal? What's your future? What's your hope?
Man, I'd love to be signed and go on, like, not even like, I don't even care if it's a big record, but one that would send us out for like a week or two a year, maybe more than that, maybe, I don't know, a week or two every 3 months. Like, not something super crazy, but enough to go out and not have to worry about booking the venues.
Right.
Just tell us where to go and when to be there, and I'll do it. You know what I'm right. saying? That's what I want. Like, I don't, the runaround I don't want, but that's kind of the only way I'd really get into shows again. We never really had a lot of luck, and I don't understand why. Nobody else is really doing our style of music, and maybe people are trying to put shows together that are the similar sound. We can't figure it out. So we're right now not even sure what the future of concerts hold, and we're just going to kind of get turned into like recording maniacs, because we have this cool ability to just get together in a living room, plug in, and just create some sounds to just get lost in, like, you know, just middle about your day, you know, kind of, I don't know, maybe smoke a little weed and chill.
You know,
that's kind of like what we've got into.
Yeah. And when you're first starting out, like, you're kind of, I'm sure you find this a lot, maybe I'm wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure a lot of it is like finding out what sounds good and what people respond to best. Is that true?
Absolutely true. Like, you know, I remember one of the last ones we played this year back in January in Pittsburgh, we played with power metal bands that were like influenced by Iron Maiden. And like your bands that play more power chords with high pitched vocalists. And, you know, we're sounding like big hairy elephants wandering the desert is what our music is. And it kind of didn't, like, I remember the drummer of the headliner's wife comes up to me and goes, I listened to your music online and I wasn't sure. And then you guys came out here and I love you guys. Your energy is just incredible. So kind of what I've learned is, people enjoy energy on stage and being entertained. So, you know, I get out there and shake it. Like, you know, people are maybe going to throw me a dollar bill or two. You know, I do some things that are, you know, a little across the line, say some obscene things that maybe get people's attention. You know, it's kind of like grabbing. And that's kind of what we've hung our hats on. When we started, we were like this serious space wizard, Lovecraftian nonsense. And then we went out to shows, started drinking. People got more into our shenanigans than anything.
Right.
Like last Halloween, we played a show. We all dressed up as the dude from the Big Lebowski, all four of us, robes, sunglasses, beards, like all of them. So we embraced the inner gonzo weirdo-ness and kind of ran with that.
Wow. It sounds like an amazing, like literally it sounds like the rock and roll lifestyle, like super fun, you know, be free, be creative.
Oh yeah. But the only thing is we weren't getting the huge mega contracts that the crew did, but we think we're like the Motley Crew, but we're more like the poultry crew or something like that.
Well, so what is it that what do you think? So not like maybe not necessarily your band. What do you specifically, Dan? What do you think is gonna help propel you guys forward to further your career in your band?
It's finding the right audience, honestly. It's finding the people that like the kind of music we're pumping out, like your Swedish rock and roll, your desert rock, Queens of the Stone Age, Truck Fighters, stuff that people like, drivey riffs that are like gonna keep you going like through the day. People who kind of can appreciate instrumental parts that are a little bit different and hearing different vocalists. And, you know, I guess not saying like open-minded people, but
people that like that type of music. Yeah.
We got to find our niche. And that's what a lot of these underground bands thrive on is niche listeners, people who really get into a certain, almost overly specific genre, but the music's incredible.
And you know what I see when, so I listened to your music, I went on Spotify and then, you know, you sent it to me as well. And I listened to it. And as I was listening, I got like a motorcycle band, not motorcycle band, but like a motorcycle group. And there's some kind of movie or TV or Netflix series that I forget what it was, but it's really popular. I didn't watch it, but it just sounded like something you would listen to on your motorcycle, or that could be in an intro to like an opening, like badass movie. You know what I mean? No,
I 100% agree. That the first song on it, A Cursed Man, that one, like when we first started playing it, people would come up to us and be like, that makes me want to drink beers and speed on the highway. I was like, hell yeah, that is exactly what you shouldn't do, but we are encouraging you to do.
We're encouraging you to want to do it, but don't.
Be responsible, but in your mind, do whatever the fuck you want.
Right.
So yeah, that song has a lot of, that song isn't really like, it's not positive at all. It's like about how I feel, how my anxiety and depression makes me feel physically or mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called Cursed Man, but it is a trip.
You know, it's really good because not only is it an outlet for you, you know, to be able to like express yourself, but you know, a lot of people feel the same way in those moments. Like music is pretty heavy. I know like some of it isn't, but the vast majority and the lyrics typically tend to, at least, you know, here and there, kind of talk about how people are feeling. And especially like with what's going on today in 2020 and COVID, like I think now more than ever, people are really listening to lyrics.
Yeah. Yeah. Not to be really lame or anything, but that A Star Is Born,
mm-hmm.
that whole thing, Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga talk about how, listen, lady, you have the mic, so make sure what you're saying is real, make sure it's you, and make sure it's well put. And like that resonated with me super hard, you know, like sitting there watching with my wife, like crying about it. I'm like, damn it, Bradley, you're exactly right.
I know.
So, you know, I was kind of like in the middle of writing at the time, maybe, and kind of like really kind of put the screws to my vocals and said, you know, don't go out there and cheese it up, man. Don't go out there and like rhyme dog with fog, you know, don't be an idiot. Like,
yeah,
this is your chance to say something that means something to you, dude.
So what's your favorite song that you had a hand in that really resonates with you? That's really like open.
I don't know. I mean, really, I mean, the only song that's hard because, I mean,
is it unsung? do you have a notepad full of stuff that you write down?
Oh, I do. I mean, no, but the most powerful thing I ever wrote was probably a poem a few years ago, probably 2012. It was about 8 years ago. I was kind of like, it was Christmas time and I got real mad about how the holiday kind of went from what they sing about in carols to what you spend at carols, you know what I'm saying? And it kind of frustrated me. So I wrote this whole poem where the first stanza, every word was an M word, started with M.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second stanza, every word was E. And then the third one was N. And it was like men, the story of, is what the poem was called, because it was pretty much like, talking about, like, you know, just the material worth of what Christmas became.
Yeah.
And it kind of really resonated with me. So that's probably the most powerful thing I ever wrote, but you'd have to really think about it and read it a few times to even understand what the hell I'm talking about. But
that's pretty relevant.
Yeah, it is. It's unfortunately relevant. But, you know, the only thing that's really been that close to me was Cursed Man. But I wouldn't say it's the best thing that we ever did. I wrote on our first EP,
mm-hmm.
We have a song called Coddard. There's a video of it on YouTube. We actually made a video in our comfort zone, which is our living room. We you know, DIY'd the whole thing. I pretty much, the drummer Dave told me what he saw for the video and I helped create it. I bought a bunch of black fabric and string and we put black fabric all over his walls and turned green lights on everywhere. And, you know, we played our song and the song is called Coddard and it's an actual diagnosis in the DSM about thinking that either yourself or everyone around you is dead. And that there's often times of self-mutilation because you think you're dead. There's thinking you're God because you're just like amongst the living, but you're technically dead. So all of that kind of got built into these lyrics. And I was kind of proud of how I wrote that one to kind of like hide it, but tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's kind of what I got more into with this whole band was telling stories, doing a concept record, like talking about a space wizard who comes to Earth to make it right. But in the meantime, he kills a lot of the people because they're not jiving with how things should be. Right. You know, he just came from space to be our final judgment.
Yeah.
And that's everything's written about, is that.
Sometimes it shocks me about, like, the imagination, creativity of, like, a creative mind. So there's, you know, there's a lot of people out there with different personalities, but you know, the people who are kind of the creative type, right? Like it's typically, you know, your actors, your singers, your artists, right? And it amazes me sometimes, like the way that you write, you could be a great storyteller. Like you could write books probably with like this imagination that you have. And, you know, instead you choose song, and it's a great outlet for you. And I'm excited to see what else you guys produce. And I'm excited to see, you know, maybe like your own song from start to finish. Have you written one?
Oh, no, nothing on my own. No, I'm kind of, I need other people. because it's good, more minds. It's like kind of one of the things that I've really kind of like, in my profession for what I do for real money. And then this, like reflecting upon the back in the day of group projects in middle school, junior high, elementary school group projects,
mm-hmm.
where you had to like accomplish a goal as a team. Mm-hmm. And there was always those people who didn't do any work. And there was always those people that did all the work,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? And like, I always found myself one of the ones who was a doer and not like a sitter.
Yeah.
And so I kind of do a lot of that now in this too.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I think you should write something and just present it to them and then let them make changes to it.
Well, it's kind of how it is. Like I remember I was laying in bed and watching TV and The Princess Bride was on. And that's my favorite movie of all time. I actually have As You Wish tattooed down my forearm.
Stop it.
I swear to God. No more rhymes now. I mean it. Anybody want a peanut? You know, I could go all day. I could quote it till you were told me to shut up for real. And actually on Serve the Mast on our new record, there's a clip from Princess Bride where Wallace Shawn points at the giant rock and goes, "It's the Cliffs of Insanity." And that's actually like the start of our one song.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
So anyways, the Princess Bride, I was laying there watching that one night. And that whole record was written by Mark Knopfler, who is in the Dire Straits, by the way, which that like, oh my God. He's a treasure. Anyways, there's that song where, you know, Inigo's in the forest praying to his sword to find his dad. And it's that very powerful, triumphant trumpet sound. And it's that do, 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 do. So I said, man, that would be a really good riff if we really just harmed in on that and kind of changed it a bit. And it kind of became a song. And that's how the writing process works.
Mm.
It's Dan is just laying there in a lucid dream state and he hears something and it just resonates.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right now it's called the Princess Riff. And I kind of like, as you're saying about the lyrics in 2020, I started to write a song called MMXX, which is the Roman numeral for 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And I started writing it. And I remember saying earlier, like, the lyrics, you don't want them to be too direct and cheesy to where people like, oh, you're just trying too hard. So like disguising what you're saying is so hard that, you know, maybe we won't even pursue that. Maybe we'll go down this other path, like go back to the concept, because I'd love to do a concept record about the book Dante's Inferno by Dante Alighieri.
Nice.
Yeah, so then, you know, I'd like to do different shit, you know, like our thing was supposed to be Lovecraft and inspired, and then comes to find out he's kind of a racist. So I was like, well, maybe we don't want to associate with that guy, you know, maybe we'll drop that bullshit and we'll go back to being desert drinkers.
Yeah, well, I know, so a lot of it is like, it's kind of, you know, figuring out what works and what doesn't, and that's really a big part of it for you guys right now. So here's another thing. How did you guys decide on the members of your band? So was that all just because you saw your cousin Do you have any outside members that you guys just like chose because you needed their talent?
My brother.
Okay.
I sent you the song Regicide.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's the last song on the record. And at the end of the record, there's a saxophone part that me and him kind of hung out at my parents' house in my old bedroom, sat across the room from each other and just kind of like riffed saxophone parts to each other via mouth. I don't know. Uh-huh. It was kind of like what you see, like Careless Whisper dancing, like singing like saxophone tunes to each other. And he ended up writing this incredible lead that's in Regicide at the end, and having him on board and just having him when he goes to our shows and watching him enjoy it means more to me than I can understand, because he's a trained musician who went to college for music. Like he's in a couple of very large acts. He's in Funkyard X, who plays at NAMM every year. He's in a polka band that travels the dang country. He's a real treasure. And for him to want to jump on and play something that he and I wrote together meant a lot.
Wow, that's really cool. That's just another way to get excited about it, huh?
Yeah, it is. That's part of it. It's like, you know, these songs have been around for a good grip, and I guess two of them are newer, but the three of them we've been playing since probably 17, 16, like four years or so, just playing them live.
Yeah. Do you like playing your instrument more or singing?
Playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We all don't think we're very good singers.
let me ask you this. What's the best part about being in a band in your experience?
It's definitely the camaraderie.
Yeah.
My cousin Matt, as I said, he and I didn't see each other for 18 years before the band got together.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say with a regular basis. He was my dad's brother, and there was some hullabaloo when I was 12 years old, and it kind of like ruined my dad's and his dad's relationship. So I really never saw either of them regularly. So for us to get together and make music and kind of form a new friendship in a later stage in our life is probably my favorite part of it. That and actually getting to play music with my best friend Dave is cool. And getting to know Wes, the guy I haven't talked about, the most interesting man in the world, the mustache of a god, Wes Freeman.
So Wes, we must ask you a question. Just kidding. Okay.
Yeah. Just that is what I treasure the most.
Nice. Okay. Now if you could pick maybe like the most challenging part, what's the most challenging part of being in a band?
Getting people to get to your shows.
Yeah.
Social media, you know, conquering that monster, mm-hmm. being relevant enough that you pop into their algorithm so people know you're playing, finding things to do that catch people's eye. Like, you know, we have like a really humorous side to us, but trying to find the time to get together and make funny videos that would probably be viral is hard. And then like, you know, that's kind of the hard part is like, it's being in this band is almost right now a second job, and it's not the moneymaker. So, you know, everybody's got their own main gig, and finding harmonious times that, you know, it's all right, are we going to work on being silly for the internet today, or are we going to write new songs and hone in on stuff? Like, what are we going to do today?
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you this. If you could open for a specific band or any band, who would you open for if you had the choice? What's your dream?
That is so hard. I would have to go with Mastodon.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Can you see your band playing in like one of those big group music venues, you know, like how they do?
We played Club Diesel in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. It's a relatively large venue. We opened for a band from Sweden, ironically, called Avatar. We were the first band to play, and we killed it, and people really enjoyed us, and it was packed.
How did you book that slot?
Well, one of the downfalls of low-level bands like ourselves is that was an incident that ended up being what is infamously known as pay-to-play.
Okay.
Which means a promoter will hand you a stack of tickets and imply that you must sell all 30 of them to even get your slot on stage.
Okay.
So we had to sell 30 tickets, and you might think, oh, that's not terrible, but it is kind of hard because it's a Thursday. It's not like it's a early start. We'd be on at like 5-6 o'clock in downtown Pittsburgh, you know, on the mm-hmm. south side. Mm-hmm. So for us to imagine people are going to get there is kind of wild, right?
Yeah.
So what we ended up doing is we all threw together, or mostly Matt threw most of the money. It's his favorite band, and paid and bought all the tickets, and then we just gave them to our friends, or they insisted on giving us money. They gave us money and to ease our costs, but you know, it got us in front of a lot of people. We sold a lot of merchandise. We had a lot of fun. We met some people, you know.
Wow.
You know, we got to take pictures with quote unquote fans, and you had people stopping you and saying, "Oh, you were that first band, and we really liked you." So that was neat.
That's really cool. And you know, that's something that like people starting out maybe in the industry or in like your industry, the music industry, maybe they didn't know how to do. And you probably just gave a lot of people some really good ideas on how to sell some tickets.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like it's kind of one of those risk reward factors, you know, it's just understanding the bigger picture, like what economics are and what, you know, all that stuff is. Like, it's risk reward. I mean, you know, you may have to spend 30 tickets at, you know, $8, $250 to play with your favorite band. But I know we sold a lot of shirts and a lot of CDs and got a lot of high fives and pictures taken, and, you know, people remembered us. And I know we had a growth on social media after that. So was it worth it in the end? I absolutely think so.
Yeah. All right. So if you could give advice on people starting out, that just started a band, what would your advice be?
Believe in yourself, have conviction, don't sell out, be true to who you are, and make sure what you're saying means something to you and you're not just writing bullshit for attention.
Very good. All right. And now, how do people find you, Dan?
Well, we are on all of the social media networks, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, but sometimes to find us, you got to refer to us as the Gossamer Project, because that is what we went as originally. And we changed our name to Gossamer with Epoch 2, mm-hmm. given a couple of different things. When we first started out, I said Gossamer Project, because when I was working on introducing us at our first show, I didn't like how I was introducing it. So I said, no, it doesn't work. So we went with Gossamer Project.
Yeah.
And that ended up being like some X-Files reference.
I was wondering, you know what, actually, wait, before we get off here, how did you come up with that name?
Well, the internet has these fun things called like word of the day. And one day the word of the day was gossamer. And gossamer, I was like, man, that's cool. That's a cool word. And what it meant is it's like the cobwebs or the little dust that collects in the corners of your ceilings and your floor, like essentially quote unquote dust bunnies.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really neat. And then I went another level. And do you remember the old Bugs Bunny cartoon with that giant red monster guy?
I think so.
His name's Gossamer.
Oh, look at you doing your research on Gossamer.
That is how this brain works, unfortunately. I have to know.
I need to know the orientation, where it came from, which country it originated from.
Can you use that in a sentence, please?
Spell it out. Don't tell your wife. Don't make her spell it.
Why do you think we get along so well?
She'll get PTSD.
I show her stuff all the time. Is this right? Hey, does this look good? You know, hey, what do you think about this?
I know, she's so good. All right, so we can find you on Spotify, we can find you on Instagram. What's your handle?
I'm pretty sure it's Gossamer Project. Pretty sure.
How can people financially contribute to the band?
We have our stuff's for sale on Bandcamp. That's where you can buy our record for sure digitally. You can request physical copies through there. We have an email, which is thegossamerproject2015@gmail.com. We would more than gladly send you our CDs because I'm really proud of the product. I'll send you pictures so you can see it all. But that's kind of one of the things that is also challenging is we had to do all of the art. We bought art from a friend of ours in Idaho, a friend of Matt's. She's a professional photographer out there. And then we kind of just added some color and then made it our own on the record. And it's very simple and it's very beautiful. There's a picture of us on the inside, so actually people can see what we are. There's some shout outs to the dude who recorded us in his studio. Like, I feel very good about our CDs, so I'd rather send it to people so they had like a nice product in hand, because I feel like that speaks volumes to what bands are now, because it's supporting other local artists. Like Katarina is just an artist and photographer in Boise, Idaho, and she, you know, I bought that piece of art off of her in Ink October of 2017 and held on to it for the perfect time, right. Which regicide, the song regicide means it's the act of killing a king.
Mm-hmm.
And the record has a crow carrying a skull with a crown on its head, so it was like fucking perfect, because I think there's a reference to crows in regicide. Pretty sure it's the crows descend like black clouds, so it's kind of like when crows come in for the dead.
So what does the act of killing a king mean to you?
Well, I guess it's the end of tyranny, okay. The end of oppression, the end of being controlled.
Yeah.
Maybe Gossamer showed up in the story to eliminate the king that held the people down so they could thrive and prosper, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Like I said, it was all a story of a space wizard's dissension to Earth and freeing people and making them happy again. You know, I guess it's kind of like a weird fairy tale with a dark twist.
Right. Yeah. You know, there's a whole genre, a whole niche for all of that. And I mean, heck, you guys could probably get into some anime stuff, like having your background music in anime. There's so many things you guys can do. I have so many ideas for you that we'll talk about after.
We're getting ready to do another thing with the guy that recorded our CD. His name's Ian Beabout in Wheeling, West Virginia, at Shed Sound Studios Recording. He recorded us like in a shed that he built outside of his parents' house. And he kind of like half lives in there, half lives in the house, but he's able to like do podcasts and YouTube, and he records and he mixes and he masters. And we recorded with him, and he's been, you know, really done a lot for us, and we appreciate him. And he's actually gonna like come to the house probably the weekend of Christmas, the house where we practice, and we're just gonna play like a full improv set.
Oh, nice.
To where it's just whatever comes to mind, we play, because we really have this super Pink Floyd essence to where you can, like I said, lose yourself. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna record that and kind of release it digitally and call it, I don't even know what, but just like giving us the liberty to do that, and having that creativity, freedom, that freedom of creativity is it's something that I'm sure a lot of artists, either if they had it, are successful, but if they were afforded to it when they're in their youth or their early days, would prosper with.
Right. Well, listen, Dan, if you ever want to come to Los Angeles, SoCal, California, I've got a great recording studio. They do really professional work, and I can hook you guys up. We can have you in the studio. It'd be great. And then after your recording session, you could go skiing, jet skiing. Do you ever jet ski?
I have never jet skied, but I've always wanted to.
Oh my gosh, Dan. Well, listen, my sponsor, they are SoCal Jet Skis in SoCal, and they have jet skis. They've got boats. They even have like bicycles. So like, you don't want to go on the water, you can do a bike ride. But I encourage you to do the jet skiing at least once, since you haven't done it. There's so many dolphins that are out there. And like, you don't go too far out. You kind of stay close by, you know? So, I mean, it's kind of up to you what you want to do. I don't know. I can't say what they will and won't let you do. I don't know the rules, but it's really cool. So they're my sponsors, SoCal Jet Skis. For anybody out there listening, if you guys live in the SoCal area, go to SoCalJetSkis.com and you can book right there on the website. And Dan, it was a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk with me for so long. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, Nikki. You had a good time.
Yeah, this was really fun. If you want to hear more of Dan's music and his band's music, you can find them on Spotify, correct, Dan?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, tell them where to go.
You can go to Spotify and search for Gossamer. The record, there's a bunch of different Gossamers, so you have to kind of filter through everything, but we're in there.
Yep. It's a group of four guys.
Yep, we have a group of four guys with a fisheye lens of us looking into the camera, 90s style. we're on Bandcamp too. I recommend searching for the record Epoch 2 pretty much anywhere you go, Epochii. As in the second chapter.
Well, I'm really excited to see what you guys have coming up. I am definitely going to keep following you, and we're going to have you on again, as we've talked about before. So hopefully we can have an early phase, and then we can talk more about what you've done later on and anything in between. But I really appreciate it. Thank you, Dan, so much for joining me. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will see you next time.
Bye, everybody.